Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Startup Sales. Really excited for this week's episode. We've got Jim Rembach with us. He is the founder of peerroundtables.com. And this is a place for senior executives to come and learn from each other, to network, learn from each other's mistakes and what successes and failures are going on out there. So it's going to be really exciting. A lot of action items to take down. So let's get to it.
Welcome to the Startup Sales Podcast, where we dive into the world of sales and marketing. Join us as we interview founders and industry experts, uncovering their successes and failures in the market. Get valuable insights and learn from their experiences to boost your own sales strategies. And now, a word from this episode's sponsor. Are you tired of struggling to reach your sales targets? We believe in you get what you pay for. That's why you pay only for the leads you get. Introducing Startup Sales, the leading growth hacking agency that guarantees meetings with your prospects. With our proven strategies, we'll bring you between 15 to 30 qualified prospects every month. And here's the best part. It's risk-free. You only pay us upon success. Don't let your competitors get ahead. Let Startup Sales supercharge your sales pipeline today. Visit us at startupsales.io. Startup Sales, your ultimate growth hacking partner.
Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks very much, Adam. I appreciate being here.
Good. So let's jump right into it and get to what's on everybody's mind. Who are you and why should they listen to you?
I am a sales guy that was forced to do digital marketing 20 years ago in the B2B space. I was working for a lady who owned a specialty research company. And I actually hired her to do some work for some of my clients, and we built up a relationship, and then I started working for her. I started working through my network and exhausted that network, and I said, okay, now it's time to go on to the next phase of our sales activity so we can actually fill our sales pipeline. And she said to me, I'm paying your salary, fill your own pipeline. And I'm like, what? So at the time, I was kind of in a rock and a hard place because my wife and I started having kids. And I had worked it out to where I only had to travel in the spring and in the fall for a couple of weeks. And I was home during the summer. I was home during the holidays. I'm like, this is cush for sales, right? Especially when you talk about the industry that we were serving. It required me to be on the road a lot. So I live in the state of North Carolina. I had no clients in the state of North Carolina. All my clients were outside the state of North Carolina. And so what I did is I started, really digging deep and saying, okay, how do I fill my sales pipeline in today's world? And keep in mind, this is like 15, 17 years ago. And so I started actually studying people in the B2C world. And started looking at what they were doing in order to fill their sales pipeline. And I started working on adapting those things in order to do it, in the B2B world. And so that just continued to snowball in effect, and I have gained, even more, insight and information in all of this. And the thing that I find most interesting right now, Adam, is that a lot of the things that are being touted as must-dos and should-dos, that was 5 years ago. And let me tell you what, the five-year-ago pre-COVID world is nothing like it is today.
Okay, how so?
Well, if you just look at the demographics of the decision makers in the marketplace, so if I'm looking at, my prospects, who are they, right? Now you have more than 50% of the decision makers in organizations, they're in the millennial generation, because a lot of the people who are, older and more experienced, have decided to hang it up, right, and retire. So that means you have less experience at these senior level leader positions, and they don't know who to trust. They also, the stakes have gotten higher, meaning that there was a book that came out by called Jolt Effect that talks about how most sales are actually lost to no decision. It's not lost to your competition, it's lost to no decision. Well, how could it be lost to no decision? It's because people don't want their neck to be lopped off or their butt to be lopped off. They're worried about their well-being. They're worried about their reputation. They're worried about their people's well-being and reputation, as well as the organization as a whole. So the decision in B2B is significantly higher. And now let me be clear. I'm not talking about a $1,000 transactional B2B situation. That's not what we're talking about. You know, what we're talking about is things that are solutions and purchases, you know, that are more like 10,000 plus with some type of recurring revenue. Those are big decisions. And we can't take that lightly. And we got to know that we're first going to lose to their own bias associated with not wanting to get themselves in trouble and look bad. So there's also, when you start looking at the number of competitors that exists out in the marketplace, that's exploding. It's easier to start and launch a business. When we start looking at the leveraging and usage of social media, you know, prior to COVID, B2B was terribly lacking in their leveraging of social media. Well, COVID caused them to, you know, put up or shut up. You know, I mean, you either, you know, performed or you went extinct. Now, the problem with that is there's significantly more noise in the marketplace than there's ever been before. And with AI, it's just going to get worse. Now, people have a lot of different perspectives on that. They say, well, you know, the good stuff will kind of make its way to the top when we have all this AI-generated content in order to be able to draw demand and things like that. Okay, that's one perspective. Another perspective is that there is so much freaking noise that's going to be out there. How is your good content going to stand out?
There's a phrase, and not totally appropriate, but shit floats.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So there's a lot of changes that have happened. And here's the thing. It ain't going to stop. You know, we still have people clinging on to, I hope it gets back to the way it was. Hang it up. It's not going to work. So we have to be more concerned with our own biases, and we have to do a better job of self-discovery and know that we have to be on a continuous journey and effort to gain perspectives of other people who have similar responsibilities. And that's what we do at peerroundtable.com. So, you know, talking about podcasting, I've been podcasting for almost 10 years. I have two podcasts. And when we started Peer Roundtables right after COVID, I'm like, oh my God. I went from getting perspectives and information from one person, whoever I interviewed on my podcast, to getting it from 20, 30, 40, 50 people. And it's like, this is priceless. So what I did, I had two weekly podcasts, and quite frankly, I was killing myself, working 80 plus hours a week, trying to create content for all those things. And I said, I need to stop and pay attention and saying, where are my insights and where, you know, are valuable perspectives coming from? So I actually reduced the schedule reduced the production schedule for my podcasts. And I started doing, you know, more and more peer roundtables because the amount of insight that I started capturing was absolutely tremendous. So you have to really look at, where is my value coming from? And oftentimes we get stuck in a repetitive cycle, and we don't take a step back and say, you know, it's kind of like that annual checkup. And in today's world, annual checkup will make you go under, right? So, you know, you have to think more of like quarterly checkup, monthly checkup, you know, and just do a quick look and say, all right, is this still the right path? Somebody asked me a long time ago, everybody was concerned and asking questions, how you doing when all the COVID stuff hit, right? I mean, they were, yeah. And it's really genuine. And so for me, I would jokingly say, well, I'm just trying to learn to become a pivot master. And that's really what we have to do. We have to set a course. We have to move forward. And with new information and new insight that we're capturing, pivot.
But I love that.
You've got to keep moving.
You have to be pivoting, you have to be changing. And I've heard from a couple people that I really love this, is fall in love with the problem, not your product. So that will allow you to pivot when you need to and allow you to make decisions based off of the problem that you're solving, not the product that you've made.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there has to be a little bit, especially when you start talking about startups and founders and things like that. I mean, there has to be some, you know, bravado and competence and it's not a gender thing, right? And that's a whole different ballgame and an issue. But we also have to, you know, vet it with a good dose of humility. Because if it's always, hey, I know I'm right, that'll get you in a very dire strait. And yes, you will be impacting livelihood of a lot of different people that are relying on you to be successful. So there's a lot of things for us when we look at, we've always seen this, the different phrases of, your net worth, is equivalent to your net worth is equivalent to your network. But that isn't the social media terms of, followers and clicks and things, but that's really irrelevant. We also have heard the phrases about, you're a direct reflection of the five, people who you hang out with the most. Why are these things, really deemed to be true? And if you live long enough and you keep doing it, you'll figure it out. So for me, I'm sitting here and tell my kids, I'm like, this is why we don't want you to hang around with that kid, right? Because they're a bad influence. We want you hanging around with this kid. And we need a social engineer from that, or parental engineer from that perspective. And we need to be aware of all of those types of things. We also know that, that the statistics are just mind-boggling, in that even though we have LinkedIn, we have all this other stuff, is that 99% of people fail to leverage their network effectively.
And leverage how? What do you mean by that?
Goes back to what I said is, are we creating an opportunity, for us to learn their perspective, not, hey, let's go golfing or have a drink or do whatever thing. No. It's, can we get down to a deeper level of understanding? And you have to orchestrate. You have to actually learn how to ask the right questions. You have to be somebody who is building their skill at inquiry. Obed Netzer wrote a book called Decision Over Decimals, and I had the opportunity to interview him on my podcast, the B2B Digital Marketer. And he talked about this framework that they use. It's called IWIK, IWIK. And what it stands for is I wish I knew. You have to become a master at learning how to ask the questions of I wish I knew. I wish I knew what? I wish I knew, and you just keep asking a lot of I wish I knew questions. It goes back to what you were saying in regards to, fall in love with solving the problem. I wish I knew what the real problem was. I wish I knew what they were focusing on that's, maybe even an offshoot, of the problem, because as humans, a lot of times our source problem or original problem, we don't necessarily see very clearly because we're dealing with the outcome.
Yeah.
So I'm actually a certified pitching coach, a baseball pitching coach. And, I was talking to somebody about, a pitching movement for a particular player, and they were addressing the very last stage of his pitching move, and the rotation of his hips. Now, you don't need to understand it, but the point being is that the issue that kid had was actually upstream. And so they were addressing the outcome. And I'm like, yeah, you could do that as long as you want. And what they were saying is that as they were addressing it, the kid was only able to correct it 15% of the time.
15, but some would say a 15% improvement is still a good improvement.
I would say that, but you know what? I'd rather have 90%. Go upstream, fix the real problem, because guess what? If we do that, that problem will go away on its own.
I think that's probably one of the greatest values of having a peer group is getting an outside view, because sometimes we're so close to the book that we're reading that we can't see the whole page, as you're saying. And having a peer group, they'll be able to call you out on that, take your ego away from the side, and really get to the main issue there.
That's right. And there's a lot of different ways for you to be able to be part of peer groups. And some of them are paid, types of memberships, and you pay quite handsomely. Are they any better than ones where you don't have to pay? I can't answer that. Point is, I would try more than one. You know, just like, hey, I love ice cream. I'm not going to eat just vanilla. I'm going to try different flavors. And when a new one pops out, I'll give it a shot. I even had a habanero ice cream one time, and I regretted that, but I tried it.
I don't know. I kind of like spicy, but it's still ice cream, so it should cool you down. So that sounds nice.
Woo! Yeah, they were definitely in conflict and battle within my mouth, and that was tough.
Oh, sure. So let's say I want to find a peer group. I mean, obviously, peerroundtables.com is a great place to start. But where else could I? How do I find these groups, and what are some important things to be looking for?
So I think oftentimes we get too stuck in who the members are. And you only need to have so much in regards to who the members are. What I mean by that is a lot of people will think, oh, gosh, well, I want to be in a peer round group with this company, this company, this company, this company, you know, because I aspire, you know, to be like them. That's the wrong thinking. And also, too, they think, well, I want to be specifically in this particular industry, and that could be wrong thinking. When we look at creative thinking and the science of studying how people become more innovative, it's actually where this is where diversity has significant value. Right? So you could potentially get a tremendous amount of value from somebody that's totally not in your industry. So you kind of have to look at how are we leveraging diversity, because I don't want cookie cutter people that are exactly like me, because that's where you fall into the problem of groupthink. And let's also be very clear when you start talking about peer groups, because I've even seen people and software solutions say that, hey, build peer groups within your own organization. There's a problem with that. Groupthink is a negative. If I am stuck in the same four walls as all the people who are participating, in our peer roundtable, you think there's going to be a whole lot of creative thinking and innovation that comes out of that? Not a lot. You may get some, right? Because you still have different perspectives of individuals. But you really have to look at, okay, this person's looking at it from, a different viewpoint than I am. Industry may or may not be a benefit. This is a skill, finding the right peer group. It's a skill participating in a peer group. It's a skill to self-assess, to know whether or not you're being humble or biased. It's a skill. I mean, all of these skills are critically important to be able to be successful in today's world. Knowing that, I came across this acronym, which to me was actually promoted, written about, say, by some of the larger consulting firms like McKinsey and stuff. It actually was derived or created from a military leadership strategy back in the 1980s. And they talk about this acronym of VUCA, V-U-C-A, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. We have to accept that that's the world that we live in. How do I approach this VUCA world in a way by which it doesn't take our organization out or take us out, or I fail to capitalize on, falling in love and solving the problem? I always have to kind of remind myself. It's that daily reminder. Okay, it's VUCA. Yeah. VUCA was yesterday. VUCA is today. VUCA will be tomorrow, and VUCA will be forever.
History repeats itself.
It does repeat itself. And that you say that, it's funny. So, and I'll share this with this particular group because, we're talking about sales and startup sales. So one of our peer communities is with sales and revenue gen leaders. And the community has been continually growing over the past couple of years. And so we track the data of what goes on within these peer roundtables. And here recently, we've had a quite significant breakthrough in our programming. And what we do is two peer challenge cases every cohort. So people who are participating in the peer roundtable can submit a challenge that they're dealing with in their business. And then what we do is we pick two of those for our discussion in our cohort. But if we start looking at over the course of the past couple of years, what are the things that, you know, people have continued, you know, been struggling with, you start finding some very similar things. And you can, and you know, when you start, or when you're on the outside looking in, you say, well, that kind of makes sense. Everybody's kind of dealing with the same problems. But if everybody's dealing with the same problems, how come everybody can't fix these problems?
Yeah.
Right. It's because we have different perspectives. We have different experiences. So what we have to do is put ourselves in a position where we can open our mind to help solve ours. So if I start looking at the common things that people are talking about, it's sales pipeline. Only having the ability to try to manage and sell into pre-COVID relationships or existing relationships. So in other words, not a lot of new growth. Partnering and all the problems with partnering, being very unpredictable. Relying on different methods to fill their sales pipeline, like trade shows. People have said, well, I'm waiting till, you know, the trade shows recover. Well, here's the thing. Trade shows maybe have started, you know, started up and are continuing to grow, and then the attendance is continuing to grow. But who's going to those trade shows? Is it your decision makers? Is it your ICP? Do you really need to be there? You know, or do you really need to have, you know, a $50,000, $100,000 expense to be there? I mean, you have to look at things quite differently.
What could you do with that money instead of going to that trade show?
That's right. What is producing for me? And I need to jettison and get rid of things that no longer produce. So if it's, you know, hey, we were getting, you know, some significant, you know, email traffic, but we're not anymore. Do you keep doing that? Well, a lot of people would say, oh my gosh, you have to absolutely have it. Do you really? I mean, I would say in some organizations or you know, some industries and with certain products, maybe you don't need to. I did have a mentor tell me many years ago, as we were having a discussion, he said, nobody wants your frickin' newsletter.
Yes. Please.
But yet we say that as standard practice. Oh, well, we got to do a newsletter. Now, that's arrogant and about you, right?
Yeah.
That's not you falling in love with solving the problem, you know, that particular customer has. And you may say, oh, yes, it is. Well, we put that in our newsletter. Nobody wants your frickin' newsletter. So stop creating and sending them. We have to look at doing things quite different. And all of the very large consulting firms continuously say this. The model, the sales model, the go-to-market model that has been leveraged for the past 3-4 decades no longer works and has to change. So it's whether or not we choose to do it. Now, how do you choose, you know, how do you find out how to do it? It's like I said, find out some people who've changed it. Participate, you know, with other peers. So what we do at peerroundtables.com is we continually build our membership numbers, and everybody's schedule fluctuates. So they may be able to participate in, you know, a September cohort, but they're not going to be able to, you know, participate in an October cohort and won't be back online until December. So it doesn't matter for us. You participate when you can participate. And so by having a larger number, and then what we do is we throttle the amount of registrations, you know, we typically know that we come out with a pretty consistent number of people on our cohort, you know, on our cohorts. And then what we do is we facilitate the discussion, and then we provide executive recaps. And again, I can tell you that so many people find value, and it's really changed the outcome and the path that they were taking. And like I said, value is in diversity. How do I put myself in a position where I can get diverse perspectives? And so it may be a peer roundtable, it may be something else, but it's probably not going to be on Google. Not going to happen.
Too complex.
Well, it's, you know, it's bombarded. I mean, the people, when you start talking about what you search for, what we search for, it's the people who have learned how to put the things on that front page. I mean, Do you go past the front page? Probably not. Most of us don't. So is that the best information that's going to be on, you know, on page one of your search? No, it's not. Is it going to be right for you? Probably not.
Well, that's what I like about what you said about the peer group. You want it to be different people, different industries, you know, because so many times if we get a group of people all from the same exact industry, we've got our preconceived, you know, I can't speak English, but what our understandings of how things work, but they're wrong most of the time. You know, one of the people I've learned the most from from outside of my industry is a guy that does logos. He's an artist that does logos, and I've learned more about sales and running a business from him than I have from many other people in our industry.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
And it really takes, quite frankly, you to be able to say, I can learn something.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to, and I want to, and engaging with it. It's when we think we know it all, or we're afraid to engage, is when we essentially shoot ourselves in the foot. And it catches up to us. And then again, the table stakes are a lot higher than they used to be. The pace of change is significantly more rapid than it, and it's not going away. It's no longer where, you know, I can take, you know, 3 years to kind of figure this all out. Really? Well, if you got investors, I don't think they're going to like that.
No, you've got 2 or 3 months, and then they want results.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think also, too, from a perspective, you know, kind of what you were saying just right there, you know, they want results in 2 or 3 months. But if I'm getting perspectives from other people, I can go back to them and say, I think that's a little bit unrealistic based off of this, 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 and this. And you have evidence now instead of you just giving opinion. And that's critical.
Yeah, and that gives you different points of view to actually think for yourself rather than just kind of go following the crowd like a lemming.
Well, that's what I mean by the, you know, the Google effect. I search and I follow, right? This is what we're supposed to do. I'll do that.
Yeah, exactly. Ray, Jim, some really great insights here. Any last tips for the listeners?
Well, it, you know, as I was saying, as far as skills that we need to continue to develop, you know, and how do we do that? First of all, we need to put ourselves in a position where we can develop those skills. And I'm actually certified in emotional intelligence. And when you start looking at emotional intelligence, there's over 50 competencies associated with emotional intelligence. It's the more emotionally intelligent leader that ends up having greater levels of success. One of the really most impactful attributes and competencies of emotional intelligence is perspective taking. We have to develop our skills at perspective taking. I remember one particular cohort there that we had where we were discussing a challenge that somebody had within their organization. And one of the participants said, well, this is what I would do. And then somebody else chimed in and said, I wouldn't do that at all. Matter of fact, I'd do the opposite. That dialogue that came after that was freaking priceless, because now you have people who are sitting there and saying, well, you know what? I never really thought about that. And so talking about baseball and being a pitching coach and me being certified is my head coach has actually been a head coach for 28 years. And he jokingly got upset with me one time, and he said, dang it, Rimbach, you make me think about things I've never thought about before. That's going to help him become a better coach.
Yeah.
Right.
If he's open to it and puts his ego aside.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the critical factor. Now, I'm not saying to be, a fish and be flip-flopping all over the darn place. It's not what we're saying. It's building the skill of perspective taking, building the skills of decision making. You need to continue to build those skills. And stay humble and keep pushing forward. Become a pivot master.
Jim, this has been fantastic. Thanks so much. Where can people reach out and find you?
Definitely at peerroundtables.com, LinkedIn, Jim Rimbach, R-E-M-B-A-C-H. I think I'm the only one on there. Rimbach's not a very common name.
Great, Jim. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening to Startup Sales with Adam Springer. Subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Contact Adam about speaking engagements or consulting services at adam@startupsales.io.